Oh,
here.
Look who finally decided to show
up. I like to arrive, you know, fashionably late to these things, you know?
Of course. How's
here?
Nice king sweater.
Thank you. You know what?
You guys wearing the same sweater?
No.
Oh, he's wearing Roots. He's wearing Roots.
Oh, you got a Roots. Okay.
Yeah, same colors. It. I almost wore that sweater. Almost. this close.
Man, the AC's turned up in here, so I was like, man, if I'm going to sit here for an hour, I'm gonna be nice and warm.
Yeah, this.
Yeah, he's got to rep the sponsor, man. He's got to rep him.
he'll have plenty of time to get all the sponsors in, all like 35 of them. So, like, don't worry.
Just got the one.
This man's a trendsetter. Speaking of getting turned up, we have Terrell here. Into the transitions, we have Pat Terrell here in the house tonight.
Wait.
DJ Terrell in the house.
Photo, just to get this over with. So everyone say cheese. Awesome.
I almost did the classic jiu-jitsu pose where you're like, you know, the heads up. You do this.
Oh, the classic one? There you go.
That Aaron hates. So
I hate that photo.
Fun fact, I did that in a lot of my Lifetime photos, and Aaron just edits them out and then just decides to put something.
I just put other stuff up.
Yeah.
With like a pumpkin face.
Pretty much it's like, Mike, we need a picture for you for like headshots. And I'm just sitting there like this. He's like, we're not using that.
Yeah. No, basically, I probably had to go through like 7 different headshots with him at one point. And I was like, nope, we're not using that one. Oh, I just want to stand like this. No, we're not using it.
Like, just use it. No.
It's not a jiu-jitsu pose unless you've done it at least once.
At least.
So what's going on, guys?
I would agree. But, you know, like sometimes you try to get professional photos.
Going on, right, we're on with so, your you? Connection.
I will translate that as Aaron saying, I do agree with you guys. I do not prefer to do the pose, but whatever suits your fancy.
Yeah, sure. That'll work.
Pretty much.
So Aaron, right. are you, how do you kick these podcasts off? Do we have like
I
an official,
kick them off,
like,
man. Yeah. I literally just roll with it. I just get into like Patrick was just telling me the origins of, because I asked him how to say his last name properly, and I was going to totally butcher it. And so he gave me the whole origins of his actual last name. So, Patrick, I don't know if you want to share that with Mike, but I thought it was an awesome story. So I'd love to hear that, and then we can kind of transition. And then we just talk and transition into the story.
Yeah, no problem. So my last name is Terrell. You can just say Terrell. It's fine. But when I was born, I actually had a different last name. And I was a rotten kid growing up, and I got into some trouble. So after I got into some trouble, my parents, they kicked me out of town. So they sent me to California to live for about a year and a half. And when I was there, like 3 months later, my dad sends me these papers saying, hey, we're changing the last name. And I couldn't really say much. I was a minor. So I was like, okay, whatever, I'll sign. And lo and behold, the exile ended. They sent me back home to Canada. And I ended up in the exact same high school I got into all the trouble in with a different last name that everyone butchered. So it was the worst experience ever, you know? And the funny thing is when I got married and my wife was like, you know, if you change your last name back to the original, I'll take it. I was like, oh man, hell yeah, let's do this. And I never got to it. And it was like for years I would debate whether I should do it or not. And then all this jiu-jitsu stuff happened. And, you know, I kind of like people know me as Terrell. So like, why would I even change it now, right? So the long and short of it is instead of like dwelling on it, I kind of tried my best to make something positive of it. So at least now I can say that I've done really cool things as a Terrell. And not have to bother changing it back. So,
nice.
That's good. So for everybody who doesn't know Patrick, so Patrick has a studio based out of Brampton, Ontario. And Patrick, how did you like even like get into jiu-jitsu originally before we even like get into your development of your own studio? Because like I've been following your social media page probably for like the last year and a half, 2 years, and it's just exploded, and I can just see the content that you're putting out. Because when I was developing this podcast, I was like, okay, Patrick's a guy I want to definitely get on this to talk to him about his experience and what he's been kind of doing. So let's talk, like, talk to me about like how do you even get started in jiu-jitsu, and then how did you like come into this vision that you're living right now?
Well, thanks for asking. I started with jiu-jitsu in, I think it was like 2005. So that was the year I got married. So we moved into our condominium, 05, 06. And then I started to get into jiu-jitsu kind of late in life. And what really did it for me was like just getting beat down. I think Mike was asking me about White Belt Chronicles, but I don't have many White Belt Chronicles other than just getting destroyed for many, many, many years. Like, you know, and like that physical and mental stimulation of jiu-jitsu is kind of what kept me going and learning the art. So I was with a school while I was living in the city. And then when kids started to happen, I kind of had to take a break. So I sold my condominium downtown, and then I moved out of it. I moved to the suburbs. And then I tried to stay with it. I still tried to train, but I couldn't because the kids were growing. So we had a very, very young family at the time. So I took about 5 years off. And then my kids actually, you know, it was time for them to start to learn a martial art, because in our household, the rules are you need to play a musical instrument and you need to learn a martial art. And that's all we want from you guys. So like discipline, focus, you know, just in those two areas, I think you'll learn a lot of life skills. So when it was time for the kids to start learning a martial art, we started to take them to like Taekwondo schools and karate schools or whatnot. And, we took them to, Gracie Humaitai Woodbridge. And Yeah. That's, we took them there. And we went to like judo schools and taekwondo schools, and they like just hated it. They would sit down. They wouldn't even want to do like the free classes. They would just sit down. They'd just be all shook. Like, I don't want to do this, Dad. I just want to play video games. And when one day we took them to Gracie Woodbridge, and Professor Dan Maroney was right in the middle of kids' class, and he was playing games. He was playing like jiu-jitsu games with the kids. So my kids were like, oh, games? I'm all about it. So they enrolled. So they chose it, which was really cool. And then it helped me get back into it, because now I can enjoy jiu-jitsu again, but this time with my children. Whereas when our family was growing, you know, it was very hard. Look at our training schedule, right? And most of the classes are in the evening, and we don't get home till like 9:30, 10 p.m., you know, and no wife is going to like that, or no partner is going to like that, you know, coming home late, you don't get to take care of the kids and stuff like that. So this was a real good transition for me to get back into it. And it's all she wrote after that. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was because of my kids that got me back into jiu-jitsu. And then I really, really, really kind of just fell in love with it as a whole all over again, like into my 30s.
Okay. You mentioned something about life skills and like what you learned through like martial arts, and that's what helps to, you know, stimulate your kids. What are some things that you've learned through, you know, your martial arts journey the last, we'll say like on and off 15 years plus?
I've learned something that I always kind of encourage our students at academics is that like jiu-jitsu really teaches you to handle pressure. And to me, that's probably, other than like being a really good self-defense martial art, which I kind of delved into this earlier this morning. Another reason why I got into it is because I thought there was a lot of merit to jiu-jitsu as a martial art, which is, you know, why I'm so glad my kids chose that instead of a striking art. That being said, the number one thing that I always stress that I've learned is how to handle pressure. You know, we are stuck underneath people like twice our size, right? Like, you know, big dudes, big strong dudes, right? Sometimes it's the other way around. You're a female training with a heavier male opponent, and they're like stuck on top of, you're stuck underneath them. And to be able to be calm, handle that pressure, bridge out of it, and then get it off you. Once I started learning how to do that as a purple belt, I'll be honest with you. I mean, white belt and blue belt, I was always about being on top and just smashing. And, you know, at purple belt, I actually started to learn how to maneuver my way into and out of things. Once I started, that started happening, that kind of opened my eyes. And I was like, man, I'm here to stay, you know?
Yeah.
Think about it this way, right? Like you learn, you go train for 2 hours and you get mauled by a big muscular dude. And then you learn how to bridge out and get rid of him. The next day, you know, your credit card bill comes and it's like overdue because, you know, everyone's got life problems, right? Everyone's got their issues. But then you can take that stress and be like, you know what? I can do this tomorrow. It's not a big deal. You know, I just got finished getting pummeled by a 300-pound dude. You know, there's a lot more worse things that can happen than, you know, missing out on a date or missing out on an important or fairly important appointment. You know, it's just stress management, man. That's what it's all about.
I feel you. No, I love that. That's amazing. So kind of like, so what is it that really like drives you to keep going? Is it more like jiu-jitsu with your kids? Is it more kind of like just building your business? Where are you kind of moving towards?
Well, like what keeps me going definitely is what kept me going before. So I got into it with the kids and then I started to fall in love with competition because, you know, as the better I got at jiu-jitsu, the more I wanted out of it for myself. And that's why I started competing. So, you know, I talked to my wife and I said, hey, can I start competing? And she's like, yeah, you can compete once in a while. This is
and then the floodgates have opened.
Yeah, I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to note you can compete and omit once in a while. So everyone's got the story, right? Like everyone's got like some partner or spouse that doesn't get to, right? And you're just like, oh, babe, I got to go compete. You know, I got to wake up at 8 a.m. and compete. By the way, I'll be back at 6 o'clock.
It's just one tournament. That's all. It's just one tournament.
Yeah. And then afterwards, we're going to go get some sushi. Okay. So, you know, just stay home with the kids and I'll make it up to you. Right? So like, you know, anyway, I digress. So when I actually started competing, it was more for me. It was because like, okay, like let me see what I can do in a live situation under duress, you know, not with my training partners. Cause with your training partners, you can be like, I tap, it's cool. You know, but you know, in a competition setting, it's like, it's sometimes it's do or die, right? Especially white and blue belt competitions where it's like, it's just bulls, right? So, you know, that's what kept me going. And then the further I got into my competition career, I actually started teaching classes as like a high blue belt. And when I say high, I mean like late into my blue belt level. And then it started to really open my eyes because when I started to teach, it started to show me things that I really sucked at. So now it kind of opened up a new level for me of, okay, well, I had to balance. I need to get better at jiu-jitsu, but I also need to be the best I can be so that I can keep chasing, like, possibly the top, right? So it was tough, but those are the two kind of, like, underlying factors behind competition. Like, I never competed to be a world champion. I just wanted to compete because it mentally drove, like, it kept me sane. You know, I just wanted to kind of keep working so I can be the best. I can be better than I was yesterday. And unfortunately for me, I kind of went pretty far with it. And, you know, now I can put that behind me and then share the experience with other people, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned, how do you find that balance between, you know, competing and teaching? Because that's something that, you know, that me and Aaron do as well. Like, you know, Aaron's been competing actively recently, me not so much. But like, how do you find that balance for yourself?
You should be competing more, Mike. But anyway.
I'm retired, so it's fine.
He's lazy, that's why.
Yeah,
he's lazy.
Yeah, I digress. But
I digress.
But you know,
okay. It's going to be a new T-shirt, by the way, made by Aaron. Yeah, I digress.
Digress.
I digress.
Okay, look, I'll be honest with you. It is the toughest grind is to be the competitor that teaches. I honestly think that, because when you teach, in my personal opinion, when you teach, you want to give as much to the students as you can. And sometimes when you're competing and teaching at the same time, there's that part of you that can't give the position, that can't, you know, you can't like give in to the student because you're mentally focused on winning. If that makes any sense. Whereas when you're teaching, like, no, man, I want you to beat me. I want you to get the better of me so that you can understand why things happen, right? Like, I want to expose an area of improvement so that we can work on it together. Whereas when you're competing, you're all about your A game. There is no area of improvement, only smash, right? There's only like your game, you need to push forward. So the balance was, for me, there was not a lot of balance, and I'll be dead honest with you. It was very, very taxing on my family life and on my social life because, you know, you have to maintain kind of even a level of machismo, man. Like, you got to maintain this level of, I need to be the best, and you can't back down from that. It was very, very, very difficult, and it caused a lot of hours. So the end result is extra hours. Because you need to train, smash. But then you also have to find time to give back to the students. So now your days become really, really long. So do you love it or not, right? Like, you know, you're going to like start to like fight with yourself. Like, man, I hate this shit. Like, I just want to do something else, you know? So it's hard, man. It's not the easiest thing, but you know, if you're willing to do the extra hours to get it done, then it's all it is. It's just time. You know, you just have to spend the extra time to make sure that you don't alienate your students by constantly beating the crap out of them, right? Like, you have to be able to give in, give yourself up too. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, I think go ahead, Mike.
I think basically what you're mentioning is like, you have to be a little bit selfish when you're competing, but when you're teaching, you have to be more selfless. Like, you have to try to, you know, improve everybody as best you can, versus like when you're training for a tournament, you got to go mindset. You got to go in and wreck.
Yeah. Like, you know, someone might ask you, oh, hey coach, how come I can't pass this way? And then you're going to, and then, you know, if you're in a competitive mindset, you might say, well, you have to pass that way. There is no other option but to go through that. So that's a brick wall, and you've got to be the anvil to go through it. You know, whereas if you're, you know, being a little bit more selfless about it, in my opinion, again, it's more like, well, why don't you try moving this way? And you might have to do something that's out of your comfort zone, something that you wouldn't do, but maybe it'll work for them, right? So it's such a tough balance, man. It's very, very hard, but I love it. So, you know, everyone's a winner.
Yeah. Do you see yourself kind of getting back on that competition bandwagon if and when we get back into competitions, or more kind of focus on the school, the students? What would you kind of say for yourself right now?
I would probably do it again, under the right circumstance. Like, for example, like if Team Canada says, hey, you want to do it again? I would love that opportunity because it built great camaraderie. I got to hang out with people from the community that normally you would see as competitors, you know, like, no, my jiu-jitsu better than your jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Like, normally, like, you would force yourself to think that way. But when you're in a kind of like national team setting, it was more like you're cheering them on, and then you actually see what they're really good at. And then you actually get to talk about it, share, you know. My roommate, Andrew Buckley, was amazing. Like, you know, like kind of just getting to spend time with him. You know, we live so far apart. So getting to spend time with him and just kind of chill was so cool, right? Like you would never get that kind of an experience, you know? So something like that I would probably think about doing again. And I'm always kind of in shape anyway, right? So, you know, I think it wouldn't be so hard to kind of get back into shape.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So talk to me about the studio. So how did the studio idea come about? And like, I've seen where you started, obviously, from the post pictures that you've shown us, and then where it is now. So how did that vision come about, and where is it going?
Also, I would like a MTV Cribs tour, if possible, of that studio.
I wish, but because you came into the sign in late, you didn't. I'm actually
on the IMAC. Wow.
So
yeah. boom.
I'm on my iMac right now, so I can't lift it up. You know, I tried to use the best computer possible to give good screen quality, but you know, I wish I had known. I would have just been doing this podcast on my phone and walk you around. But
it's okay. Yeah. Mike ruins everything.
That can be in the extras of this episode. You can do like an MTV Cribs tour.
Yeah. I can just tag you guys on Instagram, you know, once I get the kids to clean up their mess, and I mean, be like, hey, here's the tour you guys wanted. No problem.
Perfect.
And then we'll do a bonus episode of Aaron's laundry that's in the background right now as well.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Absolutely. There you go.
It's my studio, man.
Way to be professional, Aaron. Way to be professional.
I literally told the kids, I said, listen, at 1 o'clock, no streaming allowed. And by the way, clean this crap up right now. Sweep it this way. So, you know, just trying to be on point here. But it's all good, man. Studio. So
studio. Let's get back on topic.
Yeah. So the studio. Okay. So I think one of the questions you guys had asked me before was like, let's kind of connect things here. And you were talking about we had been chatting about like working for a gym versus working for yourself, like how is owning my own thing? Like, you know, how is it more beneficial or how is it less beneficial? So let me explain. After I won Worlds, as Purple in 2018, you know, I actually started to envision what it would be like to possibly have my own school. And, you know, my professor, Dan Hale, and we're very close. So we would talk a lot about, you know, kind of the future and kind of how to go about building it. And of course he was supportive of me, but I never really thought of building my own name. I think that it's a lot more difficult to try to expand and be like a fish in a pond of amazing fishes. You know what I mean? You want to be different, but everyone else is so amazing. Right? And I've always believed in strength in numbers, and I've always believed in growing a brand as opposed to starting your own brand. So once I started to kind of develop that mentality a little bit more, and I debated it for months. And then I finally made the decision to just kind of like build a home studio so that I can focus on things like online academy, and I can offer different things other than jujitsu. Obviously I started with jujitsu first, and I decided to call it the Academic Studio because, you know, it's kind of like a show of respect for, you know, my professor, for my coach, right? So again, I think strength in numbers is just so important to me, right? And that's why I did it. So, you know, I always say that I work out of headquarters. Like I that's where I teach. That's where I roll. That's where I train. And I started the studio to be more of just like a private kind of learning space. Never once called myself a school. It was a club. It was more of like just a private training studio so that people can kind of brush up their technique. So yeah, that's kind of the vision I had for it, right? All of my students are also students of academics, right? So I always wanted to kind of have the team in the forefront of what I'm doing.
Nice. Yeah. Love that.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely love it.
Then COVID hit. So now we have to pivot. That's the mode du jour, the mode du jour, yeah? Like the word of the day, right? Pivot or new normal. So now we have
let's talk about that pivot. I mean, like, that's the big thing, because I mean, obviously every school had a big pivot that they've had to make. Mm-hmm. And I think you, like, from seeing what I've seen, you haven't missed a step, because you have four or five able bodies there that you're making sure you get your rounds in every day. So how have you been, like, adjusting to that? And then obviously, like, where do you think this is going to take you further now?
Well, that's a great question, because ever since March 13, so March 13 is like forever embedded in my brain, because that's the day I canceled our family vacation. That's the day we were like, Rob Ford was like, oh, we're not on lockdown yet, but we're probably going to lock down. So ever since that day, I started planning for the future. And, you know, a lot of my posts had been very jujitsu centric. And you know what? How can you blame me? Like, that's what I do. And I started to research, and I started to like learn a lot more about myself. So how can I make my studio thrive, or how can I make it go in a different direction while still offering jiu-jitsu as kind of a source? So that became the question that I worked on for 2 months. And you're right. I started to research my insights, my social media insights. I started really, really, really dig into social media, and not anyone's social media, my social media. Like, what do people like that I offer? And then once I started to narrow things down, then I started to be able to kind of like create a plan for the future. And now I'm fairly certain I'm just gonna kind of like roll with the whole online academy thing, and you know, because again, I don't want to take away from, I don't want to take anything away from like the owners out there who are suffering, right? Like, there's, the situation's very, very, very bad. And, you know, like, I just want to basically focus on being able to offer something to a market and still be able to train. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And you're right, I have four able bodies. I can do kids. I can kind of show kids how to move. I can show adults how to move, and I can get my training in. So, you know, if I'm so fortunate, why am I not, you know, why should I not share it with other people? Right. And that's kind of been my main focus during this pandemic, is, you know, because I have the means to provide people with, I guess, inspiration or motivation, you know, and, you know, show them, you know, you can move with kids, and encourage them to still train with their kids. You know, I would feel very selfish not to be able to do that. So yeah, that's been me for the last 2 months, man. Just kind of like building content, giving it to people, and then kind of like positioning my online services moving forward. So
awesome.
I hope so.
Awesome. Go ahead, Aaron.
No, it's on you, man.
So what's next for you? Like, what's next for the academy? I think we touched on that a little bit briefly, but what are some of the things you're looking to do in the next, like, let's say 3 months, 6 months, a year, depending on, you know, how this whole COVID situation plays out? What are your plans for the future for yourself and for academics in Brampton?
Well, I can only really speak for myself, but you know, obviously I'm just kind of like keeping my thumb on the pulse, right? And seeing how our home academies are going to pan out, you know. I really only hope for the best that everyone gets to reopen you know, and do things the right way. So we'll see what happens there. But for the studio, I'm going to be offering a lot more than just jiu-jitsu, right? There's such a need for kids to be moving right now. My daughter's gymnastics program, they emailed us 2 weeks ago saying, hey, we're going to start next week. And then they emailed us yesterday saying, oh, we're not going to start next week. We might be another few more weeks. You know, this is going on all over the place. And I just think that kids, there are people out there who need help with their movement. They just need exercise and they just need someone to kind of guide them through it. Right. So yeah, I just want to be that person for the next few months and then we'll take it from there. So whether it's fitness, movement, agility, mobility, you know, and of course like online BJJ, you know, I'd like to offer that to people as a, you know, as a resource. So, and I hope they take it.
Nice. I love it. No, I think you got the right mindset. I think everything is steering in the direction where you want to go. It's just, and again, you're providing things that people need right now. And I think that's a key thing, right? You're just not stealing a market. You're just filling the market with what you have. Right. And I think you're going to get really good success out of that. The more you push, obviously.
Well, thanks.
So now like, sorry,
go ahead.
No. You were going to say something.
Oh, I said, you know, I hope so, because like, I'm not out here to be someone I'm not, to be somebody I'm not, right? And one of the biggest things that, you know, through self-reflection over the last few months has just been like, listen, man, I'm not half a Mendez. I'm not Cobrinha, you know? So, you know, I don't want to be out there trying to just like, you know, talk about like my accolades and stuff like that. They're what they are. You know, I would rather... You know, I'm really like in tune with the families out there, because I've got four kids at home. You know, I can only imagine what other people who might not have the resources are going through. Right. And I feel for them. Like I really do. Like, I really like all I want is for their kids to get moving and for them to get moving. Right. Because we might be in this for the long haul.
Your heart's in the right place, man. And I think like how did you develop a mindset like that? Like, that's not very common. Is it like, is that just something that like jiu-jitsu just kind of like reinforced over the time, or like did it get developed over time? Like, tell me your side of it.
Well, as a competitor, my mindset was if you're in front of me, you're in my way. So, you know, and again, it's one of those things where you can only learn so much. I was only able to learn so much as a competitor, because it was all about sweeping people out of the way, going through them. And we can be friends after I beat you. And that gave me a never give up mindset. That gave me like a mindset to push forward. And because I have children and because I've been able to coach many, many kids, you know, what I started to see was I started to see happiness in the way in their development. So kids would do something and they would excel in it. And then I would be like, good job. And they would be so happy. So that when that started to make me happy, then I knew that I can kind of take this kind of mindset and help other people with it, right? Like, you know, that makes sense. You know, it's just, yeah. I've always wanted to kind of like help people get better. And there is the adage, and it's not just a jiu-jitsu adage, but it's just the people, you're not going to get any better without your teammates, right? So, you know, if you keep running through your teammates, then they're not gonna want to train with you, and B, they're probably gonna think that you're a jerk, and C, like, you will end up being the lion in your gym, which is essentially a small gym compared to all the other gyms around the world. So you may as well help make everyone in your gym as good as, if not better than you are. And I, to be honest with you, I think that's what carried me throughout my competition career. Like I was all about trying to chase the best guy in the gym. And then at the same time, trying to make my training partner one of the best guys in the gym so that they could beat the crap out of me, you know, just like Malcolm. Malcolm's stuck with me right now, my teenager.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So you mentioned a lot of really good points there, but I wanted to ask you, what is some advice to somebody who wants to start a jiu-jitsu program or a jiu-jitsu school or a club or whatever you want to call it, or just somebody who wants to start jiu-jitsu in general? What would your advice be to them?
I think my advice, okay, so maybe 3 years ago, my advice to a new white belt would be just survive, right? And you survive, and then you're going to get through it. And then I think what started to happen is my mindset on that started to change, because I talked to a lot of white belts and blue belts, and they're just like, man, I just keep getting destroyed. I don't know if this is for me, right? So then when I started to help my clients, I started to kind of figure things out. Like, okay, so what is it about jiu-jitsu that's bothering you? And then a lot of times it's like framing and movement. So now my new advice to white belt would be, you know, obviously, you know, you need to survive the first few years, but you need to learn how to move. Learn how to move functionally and effectively so that A, you don't get injured as much, and B, you can have longevity. So like as you get older, you know, because you know how to move and because you're mobile, you know, it'll help you. It'll save you from always getting stuck on the bottom and then getting contorted in ways you don't want to get contorted. So yeah, learn how to move. Learn how to move and learn how to get out of the situations. And then we'll take it from there.
So when Patrick comes out of retirement, what's the dream match that's on your tape, on your docket that you're looking for?
I will tell you that right now. I will tell you that right now. Hold on.
This is inevitable. I knew this was going to – I knew you guys were going to start asking these questions.
Super fight show. Pat Terrell versus Aaron Gall.
Oh, please.
I'll take that, sure. Yeah.
Don't be scared, homie.
That's fun. No, honestly, it's I don't know, man. Like I've never been a fan of super fights. I've never actually been a fan of super fights. You know? That's just my personal. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, like I don't know. I don't know what I will do. I don't know when I want to compete.
Hold on, just out of curiosity. Is it just an atmosphere, or is there, like when you look at like how jiu-jitsu competition shows are like they're rolling into with more of those like top competitions now? Do you prefer that or like the standard IBJF like format or Abu Dhabi format?
I think I like the tournament formats better than the super fight formats, and for me like when I train for a competition, it's like I'm a different person, you know, and that's what I don't want. Like I just, you know, I like where I'm at right now. You know, I like being able to like visit your gym and roll with you, and you know what I mean. Like, hey, nice move, nice sweep. I'm not out here to like be the best, you know. And then I like being able to do that, knowing that. Oh, well, at least I don't have to train for this, you know, at least I don't have to focus on killing my opponent, because training for a competition is really tough, you know, mentally, you know, if you really, 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 really want to be great at it. So that's why I don't know if I want to compete again. I can stay in competition shape. It's not a big deal. So why do I need competition for? So.
Okay. So, When you look at like the lineages and especially like people you've seen compete for, who would you say is like the goat? because that one's always been debated, like who it is. So I want to hear what Patrick has to say.
Roger is, in my eyes, like one of the GOATs. Like, dude is so technically sound. Like, his entire game is just fundamentally based. You know, you can just watch him. It's just so beautiful to watch. Very simple movements, and he's so cerebral. I was watching a breakdown of Hodger counter-wrestling somebody, and they spent like 5-6 minutes simply on the way Hodger was gripping the guy's lapel, the guy's gi, and the way he was using the grip to neutralize and nullify his single leg attempts. I'm like, man, like, GOAT. I like also, funny story, I like Marcelo as well. I think Marcelo Garcia is just amazing. Just like, he is the original balance ball. And, you know, Hoffa off, obviously. I think Hoffa's, the way he moves is so smooth. And funny story, I never thought I'd get to tell this story, but when I started jiu-jitsu over again, so when I joined Gracie Umaita and was thinking about, you know, competition, I started to research guys who were my age, like who were competing, obviously the black belts. So there's this guy named Cabrinha. So I was like, man, this guy's, I was like, man, this guy's like 38 years old and like moving like this. I'm like, I can do that. And I think I was like 200 pounds at the time, but I was like, I can move like this. I can do this. Like, cool. So Cabrinha actually became a hero of mine from way, way, way back. And then when I got my blue belt, I was started researching some more. And then I was like, man, there's this guy named Rubens Maciel that can move just like Cabrinha. I was like, man, I can really do this. Like, I can really move at this age. And then I found out it's the same person. So yeah, like I've been chasing Cabrinha in my head. I was like, I really want to move like that. I really want to move like that. And then like many, many years later, I hooked up with Dan Hale, who is Cabrinha's black belt, and man, it's all she wrote. So it's just kind of funny how the world works, you know? So that's my list. Hodger, Marcelo, Hoffa, Cabrinha. So, I mean, like,
nice.
You know, that would be it for me.
Good list.
Yeah.
It's come full circle.
Yeah, it's just so funny, man. It was so funny. Like, you know, I was hoping to tell Cabrinha that story in person one day, but he might choke me, so.
So you mentioned that you've trained at a couple different gyms. Tell me a little bit more, like, of your experience, like, you of training at a couple different gyms, what they've offered you. You've also developed a lot of experience coaching kids at a lot of these places as well. So tell me a little bit about that experience, and are you a Creonche?
I guess that needs to be left to discussion. I guess people can decide on their own. But I actually started my very, very first jiu-jitsu school was Toronto BJJ. That's because it was literally down the street from my condo. So I would just take Bathurst, I believe. I would just shoot down Bathurst and then hang a left, I think, on Bloor. And then there I was. So it was a really, really good experience. At the time, they were with Novo Niao, with Andre Pedneris. So it was really cool. We were only in the one top level at the time. And what an experience. They still had their octagon. I don't know if you guys remember. They used to have like the octagon on the top floor.
The UFC cage.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. So I was like, I remember my first few classes, and I was always partnered with this Korean guy who was my size, and I was like 200 pounds back then, and dude would just dummy me. Like, I'm like, man, I didn't even know if I liked jiu-jitsu for those first couple of weeks, man. I only until I started kind of like escaping whatever the hell he was doing to me. And then I would try the MMA classes there, which was pretty funny. And then I would just get smoked. I would come home with black eyes and stuff. But it was cool. Toronto BJJ was a really, really awesome experience. And then when we moved, so we bought a house in Brampton. So when we moved, that's kind of like when I had to see like what other schools were out there. So then I trained in this place in Georgetown for a bit, but it was just bad timing because my son was born. So I couldn't train. And then I think that school closed down. So a lot of my movement was due to circumstance, right? Like it was just like, well, it's kind of not for me right now. And I think that in North America, I think that a lot of, I'm not alone. I think a lot of people actually have that similar, can probably relate. Hey, I move, or, you know, my wife's had a baby, so now I can't train because I got to stay home with the kids. And then the gym closes down, so now you got to look for another gym, you know? So then when we started, I restarted with Gracie Umaita. And then I was there, I got my blue belt. Then I moved again. So when I moved, it was further down. I couldn't take the same route to the gym because before I would just take one road. I'm all about efficiency, man. Just take me to one road and I'll get to the gym. So I told Professor that I was going to move. So I went to Combat, which was in Mississauga, right off the highway. And at the time, they were part of the same affiliation. So that's kind of like, that's my story. I'm sticking with it. And then at Combat, under Professor Amir, I actually found really, really great success as a competitor. So I started to really kind of make a name for myself, I guess, at the master's level at Blue Belt. And that was a really good experience, man. I learned how to be a competitor there. You know, I was always competitive, but really learned how to be tough, like how to be really strong and how to like really push through. That's because Amir is that's how he teaches. Like he's a very, very, very good teacher. So, and his principles when it comes to competition, you know, is like never give up and, you know, hold on to something and then push through once you can get the position, right? So I also started teaching kids classes there, and I think I had a great time, right? And then, Purple Belt. At Purple Belt, I ended up finding my way to academics. It was kind of pretty much pretty fateful. It was pretty fun. So, you know, and I don't think I'm going to go anywhere anymore. I think I'm good.
Did you and Mike cross paths at Woodbridge or no? Were you guys training together at one point?
Oh, yeah, like, all the time.
Like, I don't remember. That's why I'm asking.
Oh man, Mike would dummy me more than anybody, man. Like Mike and
he's a bully. Mike
and his faded purple belt.
Yeah, he's a bully.
Yeah, no, but Mike's one of the best, man. Like I remember when I joined, Mike was he was a high profile man, like, and you were already doing like international comps, right? Like you were going to California and stuff too for pans and stuff.
Oh, God, you guys are pumping me up here.
Yeah, no.
What have I ever done?
No, I think that I think Mike was really, really good, man. And I don't know why he's not competing right now.
I remember there was this super fight, actually, like less than a year, about a year ago, that he came out of retirement, and then he won that competition, and then it was ready to come out, and then he retired again. I don't know why.
Yeah, it was just a statement. It was just a statement victory, you know? He just got, hey, listen, I can still do this, guys. You know, I'm out. But
mic drop.
Yeah, exactly. It was just the mic drop. It was the mic drop of all mic drops, you know? But yeah, like, you're asking me about, like, switching gyms and stuff. And I think that what people got to realize that every school has a value and merit to it. And so it's a two-way street, I think, in North America, right? Like, you know, there are benefits of sticking with one school forever. You know, you get to be very familiar with the system, and then you end up believing in the system like wholeheartedly. And then you can potentially teach that system to students in the future. doesn't make the system better than another system. It just, it's your system. You know, also, you know, you end up with a bunch of friends like that you make lifelong relationships with. So sure. You know, lots of things, right. At the same time, you know, life circumstances are what they are. And, you know, it's different if, you know, you were training for free and giving something and you were getting everything complimentary, you know, which is kind of like an honor code contract. So, you know, when leaving the school, you know, kind of like, you know, brands you as a traitor, you know, I think we all have lives, man. And we kind of need to follow our hearts, you know? And, you know, when you find the right home, which I had, you know, you will go out of the way to stay there. So ironically, when I ended up at academics, it's the furthest gym from me, right? So as I was kind of like training in place, I was training with places out of just kind of convenience. And when I found a home and when I found a mindset that was for me, I said, okay, well, I don't care how far it is. I'm going to keep coming back, right? And I think that's what's most important here is like people will just, you just need to find, you know, where your mind and heart are comfortable. And if you really cared about it, you would stay there. Like you know, it doesn't matter how far it is or how expensive it is. Right. And yeah, I don't think people should be faulted for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I would look at circumstances are everything, especially when it comes to career, moving in the city, kids, all that kind of stuff, especially as we grow older. I've gone through the same thing as well. And it's all about communication, especially with your instructor at that place. But I always say this to other future instructors where it's like, if it's by circumstance, that happens, right? If it's happening all the time, then it's time to look in the mirror as an instructor and say, okay, what am I doing wrong? Why am I losing students and my retention is bad? But I think if we all look at it as like, hey, these are circumstances and that happens, it's how it works, right? There are cases, there's individual cases of that happening where guys just jump schools all the time, but you have to look at the whole picture on why that really is.
You know, some people just like jumping schools and learning from different places. I mean, I think as a consumer, you know, it's whether we think that it's right or wrong, it is kind of they're entitled to it. You know, it's their money. So if they want to go here from here to here, I mean, it's their money, right? Now, will the instructor think of that person differently? Possibly, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the instructor or the gym owner will be like, you know, I'm a bit of a gym jumper, but whatever, he's here right now and it's what it is, right? But yeah, I mean, there's politics everywhere, man. So I try to stay out of that now.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't get into that stuff. Mike does. I don't.
Me? No, yeah. Never.
Yeah, Mike can run for the PM of the community, man.
Prime Minister of Ontario, GJJ.
Yeah, got a great future.
Future. That position is probably worth about 5 cents, but.
Come on. you could be a really good ambassador for the community. I've told you this many times.
Oh, thank you. I kindly appreciate it. I wanted to ask you one more thing. Just funny story. Like, you've been training off and on, we'll say, for about 15 years. Any, you know, funny stories or entertaining stories or anything that has come up in your jiu-jitsu journey or things that you've learned that we haven't shared yet?
I don't know. I cried like a baby after I won World Masters. You guys see that? You guys seen that circulated around? Yeah.
No, I didn't see that. Is there a meme?
That was pretty funny. Yeah. Look for it.
I'd like to thank the Academy for this gold medal.
Listen, I can laugh about it now. You know, I can laugh about it now, but like I went through a lot of shit like back then, you know, and, you know, I think when I won, it was like winning an Oscar or something, man. It's like, I think back on it, I'm just like, man, I won a purple belt. I mean, like, it's not like I won a black belt. I'm here crying, my tears on the mat, like hugging my coaches. But, you know, the outside person will probably say, like, look at this chump, man. He's crying for this, you know? But, like, for me, like, first of all, that was 55 guys in that bracket, and I was exhausted after the semifinal.
That's a big bracket.
Jeez. Oh, my God. So, after the semifinal, I was
– How many fights was that?
Five.
Sorry. Five? Okay, sorry to cut you off, but yeah.
No, it's okay. But after the semi, which, like, I almost lost by triangle, like, I was winning clearly. And then my coaches were yelling at me because I was exhausted. I was so tired that I started passing on my knees, which is just not characteristic of what I do. And my coaches were like, get off your knees, get off your knees. And I just couldn't because I was so bloody exhausted. So anyway, I end up getting swept, come out of the sweep. Now I'm even more exhausted. So I'm on my knees again. And then it was Brian Beauchamp. He was, if you can watch the tape, if you find the tape somewhere, it's so funny. He's like yelling obscenities at me. I'm going to kill you myself. So, I'm on my knees. Like, get off your effing knees. I'm gonna kill you myself. And Omar was dying. So, I finally try to get off my knees. I get stuck in a triangle. And oh my God, I was in that triangle for like, it seemed like a minute and a half. But I got out of it. Bell rings. I win. I was already crying after that match, okay? Like, I was already emotional after that match. I'm like, I'm going to the final here, baby. And I was like, you can see that I was crying. And then the final was, I was against this, like, super good wrestler. And right away, like, he literally, like, slap, bump, double. And I was like, I was avoiding his takedowns for the entire match. So I said, decided to pull guard. And I'm like, until that tournament, I had never been known to be a guard player ever. So unless I was pulling half guard. So I started playing open guard on this guy. I'm just trying to bolo him and sweep him and stuff. And then it was 0-0. That's how the match ended. And when he raised my hand, referee decision, man, I was bald like a little baby, man. You know why? it was a kind of a culmination of, like, I moved to a new school, like as Mike had alluded to, you know, and, I went through a lot to kind of get to that point and to find a professor that, like, believed in me and just to kind of share that moment with him after like 3 months of pain, like enduring, like I went through like a depression, like a financial crisis. And I went through a depression for like maybe 4 or 5 months, even prior to the World Masters. And I think, you know, so the outside person would be like, you know, why is this purple ball guy crying so hard? But, you know, and when I rewatch it, I'm like, I laugh at myself too, because I'm like, looks a little dramatic. But, you know, if you really think about kind of like what I went through, like it was, I think it was just more of like a release, right? Like,
there's no crying in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, man. Well, there's a release. I'm like, I'm never doing this again. That's for sure. You know? So, oddly enough, I did the JJIF World Championships in Abu Dhabi.
Did you cry then?
I only had 2 matches, and I couldn't get – I got injured after my first match, and then I couldn't get my mind back into it. You know, this is kind of like, again, back to what you're seeing here and, like, about why don't I want to compete again. For whatever reason, I couldn't find the killer instinct in me. Like, regardless of my injury, I was like, I couldn't find it in me to kind of like just keep pushing through, you know? It was hard, man. Like, that going through something like that. I admire the black belts that do this every year and run through like 5 guys to win these world titles. Like, power to them. But man, once is enough for me right now. You know, I don't know if I'll, you know, maybe one day, maybe Master 6, I'd be the Master 6 champ, you know what I mean? Like, 2 matches, you know? So we'll see.
I think that's great. Like I said before, like, I'd love to see you back on the competition trail when this all gets said done. But no, that's an amazing story, especially like taking that type of all this other stuff. And again, on the outside looking in, we don't know what's going on. We just see what's happening. But for you to share that and to give us the background. Like, it's an amazing story. I love it.
Amazing. Yes. And now people can hopefully laugh when they see it, you know. Like, I get trolled a lot anyway, so, you know, people are probably going to laugh at me after hearing the podcast. So that's cool.
Whatever. That's good. No. Well, Patrick, listen, I know you got a couple classes coming up and all that kind of jazz. I do want to thank you very much for coming up on our podcast today and sharing your stories, your journey, everything that you're doing. I look forward to seeing all the stuff that you're putting out, and I think you're going to make this world a really better place as all the stuff that you've been showing, and it's just going to keep growing. So I thank you very much for doing that, especially for your community, everybody around you. I want you to keep up that great work and share it. And I want you to come back eventually, do it, and eventually see like where we've gone from there.
Yeah. Let's make a date, man. I hope to be back here soon too, because I think this is a really awesome thing that you're doing with this podcast. Right. And, I love having these chats, you know, and then maybe when you guys have me back, we can update what's happening on the studio, and maybe Briars can log in 5 minutes prior.
At 103, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, guys, technical issues, but I'm all set up now. Well, at least I don't have my laundry in the background, Aaron.
Well, actually, you know what? I would prefer eventually down the road, when all this lockdown is all done, we'll be able to move the studio over to your studio so we can get a full tour, and then we can roll after. That would be the ideal thing after.
Yeah. Awesome. We'll just edit out all the footage of Mike dummying us. That's all.
We're not gonna put any of that on there.
We'll just make everything look, you know, very advantageous to the old guys. You know what I mean? So the highlight
reel will be consisting of Aaron pulling guard, Patrick cartwheeling into nothing.
Listen. Before we go, like, I got trolled like 2 weeks ago on Instagram. It was like, I don't know. It was just a random, right? It was like, hey man, great job flexing on your orange belt. I'm like, I don't have any training partners right now.
It's your son. What the hell?
I'm gonna flex on my gray belt daughter in a few minutes. I'm gonna bolo her too. So, like, you know, enjoy that, right? Like, come on, man. But
Pat, it's understandable. You need to assert dominance on your kids.
Listen. Yeah. Don't train, you don't eat, okay? That's also another rule in the house, right? Like, unwritten rule. But guys, like, let's do this again, man. I really look forward to the next few episodes and kind of watching you guys grow, because you guys got a lot of personality. So, you know, it'll be a fun to watch you guys grow for sure.
Thanks, brother. We really do appreciate it. We wish you guys all the best. Hope everything gets out of here soon, and then we'll connect soon.
Yeah, man. See you guys.
Thank you for taking the time out to meet us today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Good job, Mike.
How you doing, Aaron?
I'm good. I'm going to end this so we can save it.
Okay. This is the After Dark episode.
Yeah. All right, buddy. I'll catch you later.
All right. See ya.